Well, good morning. Welcome to Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Deese Medical Center, where now more than ever, their focus is you. Pat Powell is your host again this week, and joining us in the studio live and in person, we have Lori Foster from Van Deese Medical Center. Lori, good morning to you.
Good morning to you too, Pat. How are you today?
Not too bad. 11 days before the happiest day of the year.
That's so true.
Yeah, Christmas.
Are you prepping for the holidays?
Oh, better believe it.
Glad to hear
especially
it.
Especially New Year's Eve.
I know. Big gala
here. I know that
here.
Van Deese Medical Center is playing a role in this big thing that's going on at Briggswood's Conference, and I'm sure you have more information on that too. And we have a very special subject on today's program, don't we?
We do. We're actually going to be talking about safe haven and
right.
what that means and the laws surrounding that.
All right.
So very critical and important topic.
And that's
about.
So true there, Lori. But you have some announcements as we get to our show today, don't you?
I do. We have so much going on out at Van Deese Medical Center, so I have several announcements to make. I want to start by thanking everyone who recently supported the Nutman fundraiser and stopped out at the Auxiliary Gift Shop for their open house. The past 2 days, we've had lots of community members in supporting both the fundraiser and the open house. The gift shop, if you haven't stopped out, you've got to come see it. They have some fabulous things, such cute things for gifts and for yourself, I have to say. And they're running some sales, 25% off select Christmas items. The regular hours for the gift shop are Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. They're also going to be open this Sunday, December 18th, from noon to 4. And we do encourage and direct people to use the west entrance to the hospital. Those doors will be open for people to access. Additionally, I do want to thank community members who also supported our community blood drive that was held last Thursday with LifeServe, and was a terrific blood drive. I want to thank the Hospital Auxiliary. They do partner with LifeServe to offer these blood drives, and our corporate sponsor, who is Scooters here in Webster City. They provide cookies for those who are donors, and we thank them very much for their support. We're looking to keep everyone healthy over the holidays, so we encourage you to tune in to our next Empower Half Hour. That is going to take place tomorrow. Dr. Nikki Ean will be presenting healthy holiday tips. It will be offered, again, from 1 to 1:30 via Facebook Live. And so if you can't tune in right then while it's live from 1 to 1:30, what's wonderful about this is that it will actually be saved on our Facebook page. So you can watch it at your convenience. But if you'd like to join us again, we'll be live tomorrow from 1 to 1:30. And we encourage questions. If you have some questions, please email those to me beforehand at lfoster@vandeestmc.org. And we'll get them answered during the live event.
And that is tomorrow.
That is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then some exciting news. Since I have been gone here recently, we actually have reopened our new infusion center in its original space. We moved those services back from, they were located in a temporary location in the hospital. Back in the new space, the infusion center now is double the size, double the footprint that it was originally, offers a lot of new safety and amenities for the patients, including a private bathroom, and we have doubled the chairs that are available there to offer infusion therapy to patients, and there's also a bed there. So for those patients that have extended treatments, this is a wonderful benefit. We actually held a very soft open house for our staff and for patients that have utilized the infusion center earlier this week on Monday, and they were wowed. Many of them have had treatments in the older center and haven't been recently, and to come and see the new space was really incredible. So encourage you, if you're out at the hospital and you'd like to take a look, we invite you to come in and see. I do want to mention that next spring we will be hosting a formal ribbon cutting and open house for the infusion center.
Sounds good.
Yes. And then lastly, I do have some really exciting news to share. This is really a celebration. The College of Healthcare Information Management Executives, and the acronym for this is CHIME, they have released their coveted Digital Health Most Wired Survey results for 2022. Vandies Medical Center is proud to announce that we received a level 7 achievement for acute and ambulatory survey selection. So what this means is among the more than 38,000 organizations surveyed by Chime, our hospital ranked above peers in categories like analytics and data management, population health, infrastructure, and patient engagement. The survey assessed the adoption, integration, and impact of technologies in healthcare organizations at all stages of development, from early development to industry leading. The Digital Health Most Wired Survey and Recognition Program serves as a comprehensive digital health checkup for healthcare organizations across the world, as success in digital health increasingly determines the quality of patient care. The scope of the Chime Digital Health Most Wired Survey reflects the progress of leading healthcare providers as they reinvent healthcare for a new century. So this is really a terrific achievement for our organization. I do want to congratulate our information management systems team out there, and really everyone, because it's everyone doing their part to allow us to receive this achievement and recognition.
Mm-hmm.
So with that. For our announcements, I do want to mention you did touch base. There is a New Year's Eve gala taking place.
Yep.
The Webster City Chamber is hosting that, and Vandies Medical Center is very proud to be a sponsor of that event this year. So that's exciting and lots to look forward to.
A lot of food, a lot of music, and big countdown to midnight with yours truly. So we're going to have a fun time, 6 p.m. until 1 a.m. 2 weeks from this coming Saturday night at the Briggswoods Conference Center in Webster City. It is best to call the chamber office at 832-2564 to make sure that there are tickets available, because they are going fast, from what I'm told.
Yes. Great information shared. Thank you,
yep.
Pat.
Thank you, Lori.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get to our topic today with a very special guest from the ER at Vandies Medical Center. So, Lori, it's all yours.
Thank you so much, Pat. Yes, this is such an important topic. For those that are unaware, Vandies Medical Center is a safe haven. And we're going to be talking about what that means and why it is so important for people to know. And I do want to give a little bit of background. You know, there were recent events that took place in Fort Dodge involving a newborn infant. And unfortunately, this ended very tragically. And what this prompted, though, is we have an emergency department nurse, Cindy Sinclair, who was with us this morning, and she reached out and recognized what a terrific opportunity this would be for public education. And you know, I don't really need to share more than that, but we know that by providing this information to our listeners, to our general public, if by chance we can reach one mother, convince one couple, possibly save one infant, we really have served a greater purpose here. So, with that, I do want to welcome, I'm very thrilled to have as our guest, again, emergency department registered nurse, Cindy Sinclair. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today.
You are so welcome. I'm glad to be here.
And, you know, before we get started in just sharing some information that is so vitally important for people to know, maybe do just talk about what prompted your communication originally to a few of us to say, hey, I think this is a great opportunity here.
So when the event happened in Fort Dodge, as a nurse, as a mother, as a grandmother, I was bothered greatly that the event even happened, but that she hadn't reached out to a safe haven. And I'm sure Fort Dodge Hospital is a safe haven. Hospitals in the state of Iowa are safe havens. They always have a sticker on their door, mm-hmm. and that just means that you can bring your infant there without repercussions. But that being said, I just really felt, after discussing different ages at work and in the community, people just really did not know what a safe haven was. They know that it's a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't know what it entailed. So that's why I reached out. And so this happened today.
I love that you did. And like you say, You know, it just could be that people don't realize that that is an option for them. And so we do want to share this, you know, with all ages, mothers and grandmothers and those, you know, parents and expectant parents, that this is an option. So, like you said, we do have these stickers that appear on the entrance to our hospitals that say we are a safe haven. For some people, they could think, okay, this is a safe place to enter. It actually has a much bigger meaning than that. So let's talk about specifically what it does mean to be a safe haven.
So the definition of a safe haven is a place of refuge or security. And in the state of Iowa, a safe haven is a place where a parent or a representative of that parent, whether it be a grandmother, aunt, brother, sister, that they may surrender a newborn up to 30 days old. Previously, when I was reading the material, it said 14, but going online and checking up the up-to-date as of October, it was listed as 30 days. So if they bring an infant in that 30 days, there's no fear of arrest or going to court. And this is according to the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and that was published in October of 2022.
So very recent information there. Yeah. Yes. And as you mentioned, hospitals are typically safe havens, but sometimes in communities there are even other safe havens.
Mm-hmm. So in some communities, it will be a fire department. Most in Iowa, though, are hospitals. I think in the larger communities, there are fire departments that do have people on 24/7. I reached out here to our fire department and asked, and they didn't believe that they were. And looking online, all I could find was that Van Dees Medical Center is the only safe haven in Hamilton County.
Very good. So that piece alone, we just want to make sure that people know this, understand it, that in Hamilton County, Van Dees Medical Center serves as a safe haven. Let's now talk about the provisions of the Safe Haven Act here in Iowa, because it is different in different states. So we're going to be talking specifically about our state here in Iowa.
So the Safe Haven Law is designed to grant immunity to parents, mother, father, from abandonment or prosecution, and ensure that this infant is safe in place with a family that for care and that they're safe and secure.
Very good. And we've touched on it just to, at the beginning of our program of why it is so important. But again, just to reiterate the importance for new parents to know this, if you would.
Sure. It's very important for the parents to be assured that the relinquished infant is left with a person who can provide the immediate care for the safety and well-being of this infant. If new parents feel that they are unsupported or unable to raise their child, this is really crucial for new parents to know that if their infant is brought, that they will be safe and they will be cared for.
Absolutely. And it is a time. It happens. I mean, it happened as close as 20 miles away from us. We don't know the details surrounding this, but it can be a scary time for new parents. And so if they just don't know what to do, unsure of what that future looks like, this is the solution. And mm-hmm. So we definitely want people to know this. So let's say that this occurs and an infant is brought to a safe haven, such as Van Dees Medical Center. What happens at that point? What takes place?
So as a nurse, I can ask a few questions. Mm-hmm. I can ask if the parents want to, they can give names. They do not have to. You may know that person, but that doesn't mean that you're going to give their names up to the police or the DHS. That's not the case at all. What it is that we can just ask the few questions. We can ask the name of the parents, parent or parents, because it takes two. If there's a medical history, if the child has been injured at all in its first 30 days, because that does happen, and if there's any medical history for the parents, and like if it was a traumatic birth or home birth, you know, just it, and if they want to tell us, they can. If they don't, then we just accept that.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think that's the biggest key is to understand that any of that information can be offered at that time, but it doesn't, it's not required to happen.
No,
we
and
respect
it's all
confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yep, it's all confidential.
Mm-hmm. And so any information that's shared, or if there is not any information shared, we respect that and, you know, accept that infant.
And parents can also say, like, if it was a home birth and it was not an expected birth, that happens. We see it on TV. We don't hear about it too much here, but it does happen. They can also just call 911 and Sheriff's Department or EMS. I mean, EMS has to be called, whether it be EMTs or paramedics can receive that infant and bring it to Van Deese Medical Center for care.
Okay. Thank you, Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, in this case that we've kind of set up here, if an infant were to be brought to our hospital and what those next steps are,
mm-hmm.
So then there typically would be a court hearing.
Sure,
that would
sure.
take place.
So we have to call DHS, the Department of Human Services. That's after the baby is checked over to make sure that they're okay. Then we do call the Department of Human Services and tell them that we have a child in physical custody under the Safe Haven Act. And that's just how you have to word it. And then they know what to do. They have protocols for what has to happen after that locally.
Okay. Very good. So with a hearing taking place, what happens during that hearing?
So the date and time of the court hearing is to be published in the newspaper locally so that the parents, if they want to receive special notice of this court hearing, they contact our local court services, like the clerk of court, and they would give their name if they want to. If they don't, then it's completely anonymous. It's to be given to the safe haven where the child is left. They can also do that. They can call the hospital and say, hey, I left my child there 30 days ago, and my name is blah, 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 and I just want someone to know. So then we contact DHS and the clerk of courts and give that information to them so that it's passed on. And then there's also what's called the putative father request, which just means, and I know there's another question about that, but what it is that if a father believes he is the father of that child, he can also contact the courts and say, this is my child. I did not know she was giving it up, or this is my child. I would like to have custody of that child. And that's, it will follow through, and it has to be with DNA testing and all of that, but it can be done. You know, through the courts.
So absolutely, there are opportunities for this.
Mm-hmm.
So the hearing that we spoke of is mm-hmm. actually the official hearing to terminate parental rights. But at any time, as Cindy has shared, if the mother were to change her mind, mm-hmm. if the father changes his mind, or if in the case that he is unaware, there are ways that they can intervene in that process. And as you mentioned just there with the putative father request that
mm-hmm.
They can.
And then they would go to court. So mm-hmm. that's why it's published in the local newspaper. Then the parents can go to court and request that, you know, we made a mistake. We're much in a much better place now. We'll be able to take care of the child now. And then the courts also can help those parents get the things that they need and the education that they need and follow them through so that they're able to be good parents mm-hmm. and help that child go through their life. So.
Exactly, because that is the goal. The courts want to make sure that it is an environment in which parents can safely raise this infant. Mm-hmm. And so there are some protocols set up to ensure that that is the case. And as Cindy has mentioned, that putative father request and registry, the state of Iowa has that, but not all states have that.
No, not all states do, but Iowa does have that. And it's just an affidavit that father has to go to the courts and fill out, and then eventually do a DNA test to prove that he is the father.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And as we've mentioned, it is an option that the infant's parents may go to court to the hearing, but it is not required.
No,
right?
It's not required. No. And then their rights would be terminated and the child would go into the system to be adopted by another family.
Very good. And I know we did kind of just touch on this, that definitely if one of the parents does change their mind through this process, and, you know, there's just, if you think about this in the first 30 days of an infant's life, there's so many new things, and it's hard for some parents to just kind of work through how their life has been affected, has been changed. And so if they do end up changing their mind in that 30-day period and mm-hmm. they decide they want custody of the infant, they do have options.
Sure. So they would go to the court and say, you know, we would like to be parents and we would like to have our infant back. And then they must show court evidence that you are the parent of that child. So that would require the DNA evidence, which is 100% accurate. And that's how they go through granting custody in the courts for the child's best interest. And then, of course, like I said, the court can order services to help them learn to take care of their child and go forward. Mm-hmm. And make sure that they get the correct classes and support of the system and of their families.
And that is so critically important for all new parents. And so especially in cases like these, we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can as a community to offer that support and have organizations come together and make sure that this is really the best environment that can be offered to that infant. Cindy, this is such good information to be sharing with our listeners. What other recommendations or suggestions do you have regarding safe haven laws and really just the importance and value of people knowing this information?
Well, I just want new parents and expectant parents and even parents of teens that are pregnant and have that fear, or teens that are pregnant and haven't told their parents, that there are options out there for them, that you can get help and you don't have to do any of this alone, and just contact the Department of Human Services or reach out to any medical personnel. We're all very able to help you and get you pointed in the right direction. And we just want you to be able to care for your baby and have a happy, healthy life with them.
Absolutely. So. You know, and I think that is what you've just offered there, Cindy, I think is some of the best advice. So no matter where you are in your life, if you have an opportunity with young ones, whether it's teenagers or young adults, just to offer this information, did you know that, you know, hospitals are safe havens and what that means? A lot of people never think they'll find themselves in this situation, but without having the conversation, so many people don't even know that this exists as an option. And so that's really what this is about, is make sure you're having the conversations. It is an opportunity to let people know that this is available.
Right, correct.
So just great, and I so appreciate that you just took the lead and brought this forward. What's really important, too, you've offered some information there, mm-hmm. but if people have questions and are looking for more resources, maybe just want to read a little bit more about safe haven laws, where can we direct them? Because I know that we have some terrific resources.
Sure. The best service that we would have here in Hamilton County would be to call the Department of Human Services. Mm-hmm. You can call the 800 number and they will direct you. They'll take your name, your number, and someone will call you back. That number is 800-362-2178.
Wonderful. Cindy, thank you. I know that we have just a few minutes left in today's program. And Cindy, in your role as a registered nurse in our emergency department, I have to say you fully embrace your role as a patient advocate. And you have been on the program previously and talked about your role as a certified sexual assault nurse examiner. We call this the acronym again. There's a lot of acronyms in healthcare, but it's called a SANE nurse. And we're very proud and privileged to have this at our hospital because not all hospitals have this. And we actually have other hospitals that reach out to our staff, like Cindy, that have this certification to help them in situations. And so in addition to what we've talked about today with Safe Haven, I thought, what a great time to just briefly mention your role as a SANE nurse, kind of what this is and how you do help victims of sexual assault.
So, yeah, I am a SANE nurse. I have the papers to prove it. Mm-hmm. I do the actual sexual assault exam when a person or survivor presents to our emergency room. I do the actual exam, and then I help the survivor of this assault get the help and care that they need to move forward with their lives. All very private, all very confidential. Make sure they get the support. We have advocates that come and are with them and then follow them further down the line. And I'm always available to be able to ask questions, and I always tell them that. You can call the ER and they can forward it to my phone if they need to, if they have questions. And then they get medication and treatments. And because it doesn't end just there, mm-hmm. it's a lifelong thing. And sometimes they think, oh, this is a one-time, never going to happen again, and it will surface again in their mind or an event later on in their lives. So it's just an ongoing process. And it's men and women, both, so that we just help them to become survivors and not victims.
Wonderful. Cindy, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much for being on the program today and serving, you know, in your position at the hospital, in your roles, wearing these different hats, because it's people like Cindy that are caring for friends and family, our communities here, and we want people to know that. The support is here. An entire family at Van Deese Medical Center is here to care for you. So no matter what you might be experiencing, these are a couple opportunities that we have highlighted here. We're thrilled to have the terrific personnel on staff to provide that care and support. So thank you again for being a guest. Terrific information, and thanks for all you do.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Mm-hmm. Anything else for the good of the cause there, Ms. Foster?
No, that will do it. Mm-hmm. We encourage people to tune in tomorrow again for that Empower Half Hour mm-hmm. on just some common sense tips on having a healthy holiday season. Yeah. Dr. Nikki Ean will be presenting the information via Facebook Live from 1 to 1:30. And make sure you take some time to stop out to our awesome gift shop located right inside the west entrance of the hospital. Regular hours are Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and special hours this Sunday from noon to 4.
All right. We'll look forward to that. Lori and Cindy, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Pat. Thanks, have a great day.
You do the same. That does it for Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Deese Medical Center. Now more than ever, their focus is you. I'm Pat Powers.